From downtown Milwaukee, welcome to Money Talk with Bob Landis. Each week, professional advisors from Landis & Company Investments discuss the latest financial developments, offering timely insight and long-term perspective.
This is Money Talk for March 6, 2020. Checking the calendar, the rock band Foreigner is at the Riverside Theater Wednesday, and country star Josh Turner is at the Pabst this Thursday. Also this Thursday, the Milwaukee Bucks host the Boston Celtics. As politicians continue to cut education funding, we now have definitive proof that it's a horrible idea. 38% of Americans, that's more than a third of Americans, believe that the coronavirus is related to Corona beer. So would you like a lime with your diploma? All right, McDonald's is now selling scented candles that smell like quarter pounders. Taco Bell candles that smell like chalupas can't be far behind. Well, we have a new contender for the Spoiled Brat of the Year award. A 36-year-old woman, again, she's 36, called the cops on her parents because they kicked her off their cell phone plan. Can you hear me now? And we're off to an animal testing lab in Sydney, Australia. A baboon was scheduled for a vasectomy. Apparently, they have all the baby baboons they need. But before they could snip, snip, he grabbed two female baboons and made a break for it. So who's not rooting for this monkey? In the studio today, we have Art Rothschild, Steve Giles, Tom Papenfuss, Joel Dreesang, and wrapping up the week, here's Kyle Tedding.
Well, thanks, Max. Volatility continues in the markets, and yet for the week, finished positive, just slightly on the NASDAQ, up 0.1% to close at 85.76 today. That's up 8 points for the week. The S&P 500, on the other hand, up 18 points this week, up 0.6% to close at 29.72. And the Dow Jones Industrial Average, down 256 points today, but it rallied into the close to finish the week up 1.8%. or 456 points. For the year, the Dow down 9%, the S&P down 7.7%, and the NASDAQ down 4.3%, all of those including the impact of dividends. The 10-year Treasury closed significantly lower this week. The yield on the 10-year Treasury closed significantly lower, down from 1.13 at the start of the week to 0.71 when it closed today. And that's a quick look at performance for the week. Obviously, a lot to talk about as far as volatility, and maybe starting, Art, with Tuesday's decision from the Fed, an intra-meeting cut, the first since the financial crisis, and clearly a sign that the Fed is willing to take some action, clearly a sign that they're, at the least, maybe a little bit concerned about the impact on the economy of some broader fears about this virus. I wonder, you know, A, if you're hearing things from clients about it, but B, what does it mean for the markets? What does it mean when the Fed cuts?
Normally, you know, cuts like this out of the blue, quite frankly, are a matter for concern. The markets didn't like it, quite frankly. I applaud the Fed for being proactive, trying to do something that would improve people's attitudes toward what was going on. But most of the commentaries I've been reading have suggested that, you know, lower interest rates are not going to be a cure for the coronavirus problems in the market, which could result in significant declines in economic activity, not only in China or Italy, but spilling over here. So I think it's good they did it. It shows that they're ready to act. The rest of the world will follow suit. But unfortunately, I think the markets look at it as a disconnect from the reality of what's really going on. They can't really change things. And the references we've seen over the course of the week to this is the lowest whatever since, everything's going back to 2008, which is not a good time. You know, it started a very bad time, you know, for the market. So I'm glad they did it. It's a positive sign, but I question the effectiveness, you know, for what we really have to solve here.
And obviously, I think we look at, you know, what the Fed did and the potential for another cut at the meeting that'll end on the 18th and go, okay, yeah, maybe that provides a little bit of a tailwind to the economy. But again, as you say, the issue isn't whether or not corporations are manufacturing things because they want to. It's that at points in time they're having supply chain issues now, or at points in time they're having staffing issues because of fears over the virus, because of fears over, I think, long-term what demand looks like if this persists for a while. And so, you know, the issue isn't whether or not we're accommodative enough from a monetary policy perspective, but The issue, I think, now is, okay, what happens if this persists for a while and people just aren't looking at maybe going out and buying a new car because they don't want to interact with the car salesman, or maybe they're not looking at going out and buying those luxury goods because they'd much rather wait to see what the impact of this is. And so important, I think, for investors to remember that Fed cuts take a while to digest to begin with. You're talking 6 months to a year before the market really fully reflects that cut and the economy starts to feel it. But more importantly, I think, you know, this isn't the cure for what's really ailing the markets right now. It's this uncertainty. And right now we've got more questions than answers. And so I think that ultimately will be what drives this more than anything the Fed does, outside of, you know, some of the really out there suggestions that they're going to start dropping money from helicopters. I don't think we're there yet. But certainly that's something that, you know, has been discussed, and something that, you know, if you really want to see some support, that might be one way you get there.
I think it's interesting that you point out, I mean, the distinction between is this a proactive move or a reactionary move? And, you know, as you mentioned, that we're kind of reacting. It's just a kind of a fear-based, you know, move to just let the markets know that, hey, the Federal Reserve is here. And obviously the markets kind of ignore that. I mean, right now it looks like futures are pricing in another, as you mentioned, another cut. Potentially, right now there's a traders have about a 35% prediction that we might go to zero rates before the end of the year. Is that going to solve our problems? Maybe not. So we need to look at some other tools in the toolbox, as we've said in the past. And, you know, does that become fiscal spending? You know, do we do some of those other measures that other countries are doing right now?
Steve, one of the things we look at when we look at interest rates, and in particular something like the 10-year Treasury, is what we get on our safe money on those bonds versus what we can get on stocks. And when you look at the earnings yield on the S&P 500 right now, so we've got a forward PE ratio of about 17, and that equates to an earnings yield of a little worse than 5.9%. And then you look at the 10-year Treasury, you know, again, as we mentioned at the open, of 0.71%. Obviously, one of those numbers is bigger than the other. What does that mean for investors looking at, you know, kind of what the opportunities are right now?
Well, Kyle, I think it's a good reminder that for those investors who have a long time horizon, that the stock component of your portfolio can provide you with the kind of dividend yield that you might not get in fixed income. Now, part of the Fed lowering rates is to create more support because that spread between the fixed income on the 10-year and the earnings yield in the market is still wide enough that there is a degree of support for stocks, even if we get a slowdown in earnings. And we haven't gotten into the economic numbers yet on the show, but when you look at some of the economic numbers, even if the economy is seeing a bit of a slowdown, the earnings yield is still so much bigger than the bond yield. It tells me that the stock market isn't falling apart. We're just getting some accelerated trading because of the uncertainty surrounding what's happening with the supply side issue in the markets.
That's such a great point, Steve. And I think we so often want to compare what we're dealing with right now to some event in the past, whether it's, okay, well, the flu every year kills this many people, and so let's look at what this means versus relative to the flu. And I think the reality is, you know, it's a little easier to map out what that looks like for the flu because we've dealt with it for so long. This is a very novel issue. You get back to, you know, the original SARS outbreak or MERS, and you say, okay, those were more severe, but we were a less global economy then. And so I think the challenge in making those comparisons is that it's just not strictly apples to apples, and so important to get back to the fundamentals and to get back to, what am I getting paid to hold a stock, assuming that earnings materialize in time the way that we think they will. Maybe the epidemic now means that those earnings are delayed, but ultimately they come back. And I think more importantly, you know, that this, just remembering that this isn't those other instances, that this is its own thing. And so, you know, I think that's the focus right now. That's what we really need to remember, is that as long as we keep having questions that don't have answers, I think it's a little early to say here's what's going to happen.
Kyle, I've had a lot of clients ask me in the last couple of weeks, what do we do now? Steve, what do we do now? The market is really getting volatile. And for most of them, the answer is, well, nothing. We've already done everything that we could to anticipate periods like this. For those investors that already have a well-balanced portfolio, their portfolio, their allocation is reacting exactly how we would expect it to during periods of market volatility. Look at your bond funds. Your bond funds are up 2, 3, 4% in some cases, and they're offsetting the pullback in stocks exactly how a well-balanced portfolio is designed to react, Kyle.
Kyle, another interesting comment. Based on what you gave us early in the show, the year-to-date figures are telling. The Dow is off 9% for the year, but the NASDAQ, which contains more aggressive growth-oriented stocks, is off 4.3%. So this tells me the smart money staying in the game or even maybe buying those growth stocks in the expectation that down the road, they're the ones that are going to do the best. And it's the headline, you know, the Dow. I mean, we don't reference the Dow at all other than on the show. The S&P's in between, you know, down just under 8%. It seems like we've been through a war here, but it's just, you know, a series of battles that you know, it's far from over. At some point, this is going to, you know, the direction will change. Things will settle down. We'll have more certainty with respect to, you know, hopefully the end of the coronavirus, and things are going to take off. But we just, like you said, don't know when. It's the uncertainty that's causing problems.
And I think if we told investors that, you know, looking at this week and how volatile things were, if you told them at the end of the week, yeah, you actually had a positive number for the week, most people would be surprised. I know I was surprised when I started doing the math before the show to say, where did we really end? To see that, again, the Dow's up 1.8, the S&P's up 0.6%. That's a meaningful gain, but it took a lot of pain to get there. You had a couple of really big days of sell-offs, a couple of really big days of a market returns. And so I think a reminder that volatility isn't just downside, it's also upside. And if you react to the potential for loss, you also miss the potential for those big gains. And so if you called in Monday afternoon or Tuesday talking to us about what should we do, you know, I can guarantee you every one of us around the table said the best move right now is to rely on the long-term plan that you've had. And maybe we reassess down the road whether that plan is still right for you, but you don't want to react to this because if you do, you miss those big up days that we saw later in the week. And again, it's those days later in the week that made the week positive as a whole.
Well, and if you even go back farther than just this week, Kyle, the Dow is averaging an 8% return over the last 3 years. So in the for what it's worth category, the longer your time horizon, the better you're going to look.
Well, and I think that gets back to the plan, right? That our plan isn't focused on what we do in response to a bad week or two or even potentially a bad couple of quarters if this sticks around for a while, but it's how do we build a portfolio that gets us to that 3-year number, that gets us to the 5 or 10 year number. And I think time horizon is key, recognizing that even if you retire today, it doesn't mean that your time horizon is suddenly tomorrow. Don't act like you need all your money tomorrow, which I'm sure we've said on this podcast 20 times. The reality is it's got to get you through a long-term retirement. It's got to get you through, you know, more than just this market cycle. And so, you know, the plan is really long-term for a reason.
Well, I think, you know, just to add one more point here, I had an interesting interaction with a client who needed to take out some funds, and she was like, Tom, I know it's the worst time in the world, the market's down, but I need to take it. I'm like, well, I'm happy to tell you that your bonds are up. Your bonds are doing fine, we can take from there. It's like, well, that's great. You know, it's just kind of a perspective, you know, point to know that, and that's why we have our balance here, and that's, you know, everything's working as we designed and had hoped.
And Tom, I think that's also a reminder that people's portfolios aren't the S&P, aren't the Dow. So when, you know, I mean, those are the numbers that we hear about on the news, and we see those, you know, very volatile. The most people's portfolios aren't as volatile as that.
Such a good point, Joel. A lot of economic data this week, and I think, you know, one of the challenges when we look at this economic data is that we're looking at stuff that's last quarter or last month or maybe a couple of months old. And so a lot of it not quite factoring in, you know, the SARS-CoV-2 virus, but certainly some signs and some of it at least that it's starting to be on people's minds.
Kyle, before the Labor Department released its employment report this morning, I was watching a panel of economists and they kind of went around the table and said, you know, this was the report that they were least interested in because they just know that it's a snapshot of 1 month. A lot of times, most times, those numbers are adjusted, you know, in between this report and 2 months from now. So, but you can use it as a benchmark. You can use these things as a benchmark to sort of say, this is where we were in January or February, and, you know, before we really knew more of the impact. of the coronavirus.
And obviously, Joel, we look a lot at trend, and we look a lot at rolling averages, not just month to month, but what's the general direction of the economy. And I think, you know, we look at a lot of the data that came out this week. The broad strokes are that the economy continued to be on pretty solid footing when you look at through the months of January and February. There wasn't a lot out there that suggested that we were in for any kind of real downturn. And I think the one risk there is that because we're so consumer-driven, this data could change pretty quickly if we get that crisis of confidence, if we get consumers unwilling to go out and spend. And so, you know, you look at something like the ISM manufacturing and non-manufacturing numbers that point to, maybe an economy that's, and Joel, you can talk a little bit more about the numbers themselves, but economy that's growing, but growing slowly.
Right. Yeah. So the manufacturing one is the one that we look at most on those ISM numbers. And it showed that for the second month in a row that the manufacturing industry is actually expanding, which it had been contracting for a while because of questions about, world trade and what was going on there and the global economic slowdown. So to see that it's, as you said, that momentum we've got a couple of months in the positive side, that was good. And that's the Institute for Supply Management, and they interview purchasing managers, and a lot of them, especially on the manufacturing side, were bringing up coronavirus and saying they've got questions about, their suppliers and getting the things that they need for what they're doing. And then the non-manufacturing one is actually a bigger part of our economy. And that was up for the 121st month in a row, showing expansion for that part of the economy. But again, it was a little slower than it has been. And some of those purchasing managers, too, were saying, we don't know what's going to be happening with all the things that we're seeing in the news about coronavirus.
And some data on construction spending this week. And obviously, if you're looking to build, you're probably not thinking, a couple of weeks out or even a couple of months out, but really planning ahead for the next couple of years and beyond. And so some encouraging news on the construction front as well.
That's right. So that indicator was up for the seventh month in a row, and housing was up for the month and up compared to a year ago. And housing's like 40% of all of the construction activity. So that's good. And now with what's been going on with interest rates, mortgage rates are at record lows. So if somebody, is still thinking about doing that and they have the wherewithal, and more importantly, they have the confidence, they can get a good mortgage rate and go out there and build or expand.
And the productivity number came out this week. And I think, the further we go along in this kind of current coronavirus issue, the more noise there's going to be in that data as workers are missing work, as factories are slowing down or shutting down for periods of time. But, some signs at least that, productivity has continued to kind of meander around where it's
right.
been.
Yeah. And again, looking at sort of the bigger picture on that. So, we got the fourth quarter numbers, and that told us what, the average was for 2019. And that was that showed productivity up 1.9%. And that was 3 years in a row that had increased. It's still not back up to the average since 1948, which is 2.2%, but we're getting closer to that.
I think it's so important to look at these economic numbers, the economic data, and put it in perspective of what it means for the investor, what it means for the reports that we see coming down the road. And obviously, the consumer being such a big piece of our economy, that I think is the piece that's going to be most important to watch as we try to digest what's really going on with this particular issue. That seems to be on everyone's minds right now. But, if we answer a couple of questions, could quickly make its way back into the background. Now, the reality is nobody knows what's going to happen on that front, and certainly a lot of room to figure out what is going to happen before we can say here's the economic impact. But I, fully expect that, the economic data is going to continue to be mixed. We're going to continue to see some revisions to earnings forecasts, to economic forecasts, just as we get better and more complete information. So good to know where we are, good to know where we've been, but more importantly, I think good to know kind of that we should expect things to be a little more in flux over the next couple of quarters.
And Kyle, that's a good reminder that the importance of consumers and how much they control the GDP in our country. And on that, we had news this afternoon from the Fed looking at the consumer credit and credit card borrowing for the month of January actually took a little dip. It was down 3.3% on an annual rate from the month before. But that's also a reminder that consumers are very fickle. They can turn on a dime, if you don't mind the expression, and it's sort of hard to gauge sometimes what's going to set them off.
Art, one of the big things we've talked about this week is just the right way to think about these kinds of events, the right way to think about this kind of market volatility. And I know you have been at this for long enough that this isn't your first time around volatility. This isn't your first time talking to clients about the kinds of concerns they have. What are you telling them right now?
A couple of things. Number one, I think the key to success in getting through these markets is, of course, call if you have questions. We're here to help you. We're coaches. We're counselors. Anytime anyone calls, too, it's usually the comment, gee, your phone must be ringing off the hook, and to which any one of us replies, no, not really. You're the only one who's called today. So don't be shy, if you have a question, number one. Number two, our major tool to get us through these things is balance, as you and I have talked about on a regular basis. So if you have a portfolio that's half stock and half bonds, and if the market is down 7%, 8% for the year, you shouldn't be down more than 4%. And if we have you more weighted toward growth stocks, you might even be doing better than that. If you have bond funds, as Steve suggested, that have gone up, you might even be doing better than that, number one. Number two, relative to past declines, like the tech wreck in early 2000, and or 2000 to 2002, and then the Great Recession, those things seemed heavier. They might have progressed over a slightly longer time period. But this one, the numbers, like you said earlier, the volatility is there, but we haven't lost that much. And we still, as Steve suggested, over long periods of time, including last year when the stock market, when the S&P went up 31%, if anyone's scared and they want to get out, they should. But we're not suggesting that. We think you should stay in on a balanced basis because, as you suggested with those economic indicators, it's going to be a long time before they're going to really show what's really going on in the future. They're backward looking. The market will turn before those indicators do.
And Art, just to note that when the Fed announced its rate cut this week, they actually, in that release, commented on how strong the economic fundamentals are.
Yeah. Nothing's really changed other than more fear about the future and what this might mean. But as soon as we get positive news, this thing, as you suggested, Joel, could turn on a dime.
And I think so critically important for investors to remember that, none of us are saying this is going to turn anytime soon. There's plenty of reasons to think that this can persist. There's plenty of reasons why volatility is a part of being a stock investor. And that's why you build portfolios the way we build them, so that you have balance, so that you have places to go, Tom, as you say, when markets are down, to be able to take a withdrawal, to be able to, reallocate if that's what you think you need to do right now. But I think, most importantly, it's not about trying to figure out when is this going to end. It's about really relying on that long-term plan, really falling back on the idea that, nobody ultimately knows, especially in a situation like this where it's a health issue, not a financial issue. It's a virus. It's not economies necessarily. Ultimately, there's plenty of room for volatility to continue. But then again, once we do get some resolution, we could go back to normal fairly quick. And so, I think count on that plan, try not to react, and to the extent you feel like you need to, know that we're here to have those conversations. Well, thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next week.
Thank you for listening to Money Talk with Bob Landis. If you have a financial question you want answered on next week's show, email it to moneytalk@landis.com. To keep informed throughout the week, visit our Money Talk page at landis.com.